All right, welcome in to another edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Welcome to episode 10. Pat Steinberg along with you for the next hour here on the Flames Talk podcast feed and Sportsnet 960. The Fan, Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And on episode 10 of the program, it is Ronnie Stern in the spotlight this week. 396 games as a member of the Flames and lots of great stories coming up over the next hour. It's Ron Stern in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, plus Tim Hunter still hanging out as part of the conversation, as these guys all sat down at the beautiful Garrison Pub where we tape all of our Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles shows. So it'll be Ron Stern with Tim Hunter plus your hosts Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. All that coming up in just minutes time, but before we get to the conversation, it is time for the easiest edition of This Week in Flames History ever. This Week in Flames History brought to you by Village Honda. It's the most famous day in franchise history, and it happened this week, 36 years ago. We take you back to May 25th, 1989.
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there. Over at the penalty box, Jim Poplinski and Tim Hunter, not dressed tonight, have joined Al MacInnis. They've got their sweats on, and the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup! We're the winners! We're the winners! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! And the Flames coming out to celebrate out on the ice now as the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup for the first time in their history. And they do it here in the Montreal Forum.
The iconic call from the iconic Peter Marr. Yep, the Flames won their first and only Stanley Cup with a 4-2 Game 6 win over the Montreal Canadiens on May 25th, 1989, 36 years ago this week. Lanny McDonald in his final NHL game broke a 1-1 tie at 4:24 of the second period, and Doug Gilmore scored the eventual game winner at 11:02 of the third. Calgary won the game 4-2. They won the series 4-2 with 31 points in 24 playoff games. Defenseman Al MacInnis named the Conn Smythe Trophy winner, and with that victory, the Flames became the only team to ever raise a Stanley Cup at the Montreal Forum. 36 years ago this week, the Flames won their first and only Stanley Cup, and that is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Okay, let's get to the conversation. It is Ron Stern sitting down with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, and for the first half or so of the conversation, Tim Hunter at the Garrison Pub as well. Let's listen into the conversation right now. Lots of good stories coming up.
You know, while I got both you, well, Sterny and Huntsie here, you guys fought each other too a couple times, didn't you, throughout your career?
Yeah, a couple times. I
remember what happened.
My first story, if I remember right, I didn't realize I'd fought you a couple times, or you fought me. So I remember I was playing for Calgary, I think. No, I was playing for the Canucks, and then we fought. Yeah, I was playing for the Canucks, and I ran... skated across the ice and ended up hammering Suter, and then you came flying in, and we were tussling, we were kind of throwing, and Tim's a similar type of fighter where clutch, grab, release, right, and kind of get you thinking one way and switching. So I wasn't bad at that, and I honestly didn't know a lot of tough guys in the league. I was pretty naive. I just kind of did it. And so anyways, I ended up, I think you've heard this story. So I switched towards the end of the fight, and I throw a left, and I don't hit you hard at all, but you slip on a banana peel and go down. Well, it looks like I won the fight. So I go into the penalty box. I'm like not thinking much of it. Sit down on the bench, and then Greg Adams sits next to me and
Which
turns.
One?
The
there's two of them, Gus.
Tall, Gus. Yeah, tall, skinny one. Yeah.
One's Greg, and the other's Greg C.
Adams. C. Adams.
Yeah. So Gus looks at me.
Nelson, BC. Yeah.
Gus looks at me, and he just shakes his head. And I go, "What?" He goes, "You have no idea what you just did." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You just fought one of the heavyweights in the league." And I go, I got lucky. And he goes, "Yeah, but no one else is going to think that. Now everyone's coming for you." And then I think we fought one more time. And I mean, you were always a fair fighter. You stuck up. Like, I knew if I ran someone over, you were coming to defend your teammate. And I was the same type. The difference is the bigger guys that you fight, if you don't do well, you still get a pat on the back and everyone thinks, good job, right? Where you fight guys your own weight or a little smaller and they cut you or beat you up, you're like, okay, now I look like I failed.
But you guys played together in Calgary.
Just briefly, right? Yeah. I got traded to Calgary right after that, like towards the end of the year, and they sat me right next to you, which was even funnier.
You know, the one thing I do remember about Sterny is we're playing I'm in Van, and I'm in Calgary, he's playing for Van. He comes flying across the ice to run me over. And I had an aluminum shaft stick.
Oh, dear.
A Hespler.
A weapon.
Oh, Hespler.
Ten games.
I know he's coming, so I just turned and I cross-checked him across the arm, and my stick bent like a banana. I went, holy mackerel. Wow. And I think
that had a lot of momentum.
I think we might have fought then or something, or I might have got a cross-checking penalty with it. But I don't remember the fight. I don't remember many fights. Yeah. But I do remember knowing that Sterny, like pound for pound, was one of the toughest guys by far.
It gets old. It gets old real quick.
Oh, no. Seriously. You know, after fighting him, and now you're kind of going, boys, you know, careful. This guy's really tough. Another guy like Sterny was Shane Churla.
Or Chainsaw.
He was faster. Yeah. He threw punches faster than I did.
He was a young guy in Calgary. Had him in Calgary. Yeah. And we're playing, I don't remember, was it Vancouver or L.A.? I think it might have been L.A., Tiger Williams. He skates by me. He goes, "Hey, Hunts, you better tell that guy if he doesn't stop acting like a clown, I'm going to kick the shit out of him." I said, "Tiger, you're going to have your hands full." He fights Chainsaw, and Chainsaw mopped the rink up with him. Yeah. So I skated by the penalty box. I said, "Can't say I didn't try to warn you, Tiger."
Yeah.
But those guys, you know, he became a captain in Dallas, but that's 6 feet, really tough. You know, you always had to be aware of those guys because, you know, they're hard to fight because they get in close on you. And he was switching hands. I'm going, Jesus Christ, this guy's knowing how to fight.
Oh, he came from a family of fighters.
I was family of fighters. Oh, family. That'll lead into the next one.
Lineage. Yeah.
I'm definitely not the toughest in my family.
Oh, yeah. Like the time you were, was the Memorial Cup where you had to jump into the stands, Ron, or what?
Yeah. So I'll tell that story. So I'm Memorial Cup. The game's over. We lose. Guy next to me on the other team, of course, puts his hands up and like screams in my face. So I sucker him with my glove. The bench is empty, full on brawl. They get me off the ice. I go across, standing like the lone soldier off the ice. And I look and I see someone coming down from the stands and jumps onto the bench and picks up a glove and throws it at their coach. Well, the whole team goes after this person. I recognize the person, so I open the gate, skate across the ice, jump into the pile. I'm on the bench. The police are there. We're fighting. And I realize it's my sister. She's like, "Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. What do I do?" I said, "Get the hell out of here and don't tell anyone you know me." So the next day, I get suspended for a game, Memorial Cup. My coach tells me, "Don't tell anyone. that you know that person. Don't tell anyone anything. So I'm suspended and I'm up in the stands. I buy a 50-50 ticket. We're losing 4-1. All of a sudden, they announce the winner of the 50-50 ticket, Ron Stern from Laugale. So the whole place is booing and screaming, and my coach is the only person clapping. And I look down, I was like, I am so dead right now.
Stern, how much was a 50-50 for?
It was $750.
You could have paid for Huntsie's
fine.
Had $250 left over.
And if I got the kickback from the 10-game suspension at the end of the year, I would have made money.
I was just saying, when Huntsie was talking about breaking the Hespler, you broke his Hespler aluminum stick or whatever, I go, $500 could barely buy you a stick now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're...
And that's a fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my stick. Yeah, take that. Yeah. Take it as a collateral. That's good. Yeah. It's used, but it's still worth a lot. We should have got into the story about the Buffalo Brawl.
Oh, yeah, that was
a
good...
That was you who started it with Tony Tanti.
Probably. But I don't think I don't even think I ended up fighting...
No, you didn't.
...anyone. The refs...
Cross-checked him into the bench.
Yeah.
And then got a two-minute penalty.
Yeah.
I don't even think you got a two-minute penalty.
No, and then just all you got to do is befriend the linesman and pretend you're going after someone, and then they hold you back, and everyone else is kicking the crap out of each other.
was this the old the odd in Buffalo, or where was this?
I think it was the old odd. Yeah, it was in the odd.
Was it Lafontaine? Was Lafontaine there?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. I think it might have been him.
No, it was Tony Tanti you went after.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Remember?
Yes, please.
Jamie McCowan had broken Pat LaFontaine's jaw, and that was the next game back in Buffalo.
Gotcha.
And you guys have a long, rich history, man.
I think you retired when I started playing junior.
Okay. Enough.
Let's get back to Sturdy.
Enough.
Let's get back to Sturdy here. So I don't know how you pronounce this.
But Stern.
Ronald Stern. Longueuil?
Longueuil.
Yeah.
There you go.
Chevalier?
Yes.
Which means horse?
Cavalier, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Cavalry, yeah. So, growing up, Sterny, how was your favorite hockey team?
I'd have to say the Habs.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, Guy Lafleur was my idol, which was ironic because I ended up playing against him in the minors when he came back and played and was in Colorado.
Yeah.
And then Ron Duguay was down there. I was like, I love these guys. It was pretty impressive.
I still remember that photo of Ron Duguay in that mesh muscle shirt sitting on top of the net and then with the New York Rangers. Anybody who asks me who that is, I say, just go Google that. That's who Ron Duguay is.
That's funny. He still has the poster in his room.
Yeah.
We don't judge.
It's on the ceiling. Not that there's anything wrong.
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
But you
great
know,
to support the game.
You know, Sterny, we just had Huntsie on. Huntsie played a certain way. You look at his junior stats. You look at his career. You look at yours. I mean, you're full of penalty minutes, but you could score, too. You could you could. I mean, looking at this, you got 71 points in 56 games, 266 penalty minutes.
I'll tell you a few stories about that. So my first year, they freaked me out because I went from midget double C to midget triple A.
So where were you? We can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
Long, twice you said it. U18 triple C.
You were giving Tim a hard time.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. But no, it was called midget back then.
Yeah.
So it was midget double C, which would be U16.
I was going to say, what the hell is double C?
So it was our traveling team that, I mean, there was double B, double A, and then triple A. So I was playing double C. So just to give you an idea, a small little town, you know, played there. I get invited to pre-camp for AAA my second year.
How old are you?
I was 15, turning 16.
So would you be, we can't say it anymore, but anyways, minor.
Yeah. We got to come up with a nickname
for
it.
We do.
Anyways, so I show up. And it's the middle of the summer, so I show up, and they go, okay, yeah, you're checked in. Where's your gear? And I go, why would I bring my gear? And they're like, well, it's pre-camp tryout. See who comes to camp. I was like, I don't have my gear. So they made me wear the captain's gear. So he was size 10 and a half skates. I was 8 and a half. Anyways, that game was not great. And next day came back, did the trial. They invited me to the main camp. I was the worst player on the team by far. Made the team. Had a coach who screamed at me, berated me for the whole year, but was my number one fan. So go figure. And everyone kept saying, oh, you're going to get drafted to junior. And I was like, I didn't put two and two together. You got drafted junior, and then you're eligible the next year for the NHL. And it was almost overwhelming for me. So I did get drafted. Played my first year in Longueuil. As you can see, I think, what did I score, 6-7 goals?
Your first year, you had 6 goals and 14 assists for 20 points and 176 penalty minutes.
Yeah, so my 176 penalty minutes, whatever were fights, I fought for my knees. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't big enough. I tried, but just couldn't compete at that level. Was still supposed to get drafted. Went to the draft with my buddies, bottles of champagne, all excited. First 6 rounds go by, and I look at my agent. My agent goes, Philly's taking you the next round. I was like, that's awesome. That's a great fit. No, I went 12 rounds, didn't get drafted. So I'm pretty sure what happened is, God bless my mom. My mom had only seen drafts where it was the first rounders on TV, where everyone wore the nice white suits and fancy suits. Well, she bought me a white suit and red shoes. So I showed up in the stands at the draft, and I'm pretty sure when Philly was going to take me, they looked up in the stands and saw me in my white suit and red shoes and went, no, we'll pass, thanks.
Yeah. White suit and red shoes.
You know, nowadays I'd own that, but no, back then it was all my mom.
That's probably why you got tougher.
I had to. So my agent came to me after the draft. He comes to me after. He's like, well, it's not like you had a great year. It's not like you scored a lot. It's not like you fought a lot. And I said, well, I didn't expect to get drafted. Central Scouting and you told me I was getting drafted. So I was pretty upset about that. And I was like, okay, I will train all summer and I will come back a different person.
Did you have a trainer?
I hired a trainer, local gym, worked out twice a day, gained 20 pounds, came to camp, and I could stand up when I fought. I could throw. I got a little name for myself being tough. I was captain of our team, which for an English kid to be captain of a French team, you know, I had to earn that over time, and I learned a lot about leadership and about, it's not always making those choices, it's trying to get the guys to support. And I learned that early on, which was a great lesson. Coaches, Guy Chouinard, Guy Lapointe, Guy Lafleur was our president, Gilles Loupien, like all these guys that I idolized and looked up. Maybe not Guy Chouinard, but he was unbelievable.
What made him so great?
I think they got the most out of me. They developed me as, you know, a power forward, from a skill, working within my skill. You know, in junior, you're able to intimidate. You're able to get closer to the nets. You know, my shot wasn't as big a weakness at the junior level because goalies weren't as good. They weren't as big. So I was able to score, you know, a lot of goals and create that space, time and space. That now, once I moved up a level to the NHL, I didn't have that time and space because these are all professionals and, right, they're gonna match me. Yeah, it took me a while, and that's kind of what.
Why were you looking at me when you said that, Peter?
Hell of a golf shot. It was in Vancouver. It's funny because they sent me originally I'd made the team in Fredericton, which was shared with Quebec for a farm team. So then Ron LaPointe was the coach then, and he's like, I want to keep you, but Vancouver wants to keep the 20-year-olds together. So I go, well, where are we going? They go, well, they're partnering up with a team in the International League called Flint, Michigan. So, yeah. So I, Flint Spirits at the time, yeah. So I kind of go, right away I go, I'm never making it. Never making it after I go down there. And they go, no, we'll call you up just as easy from there. Okay, so I go down, and it is the movie Slapshot. It was fearing for my life every game. There were 6-7 guys that should be in jail that were playing. So I get called up. I'm pretty happy about it, right? I was like, oh, thank God, right? You get called up. I don't have to deal with this. Well, that was, I didn't have the skill level, didn't understand that gap. So I couldn't compete, and they kept sending me down to develop, and I kept begging, you know, Brian Burke, Pat Quinn. I was like, guys, you can't send me down. I go, you don't get it. I don't develop down there because I'm fearing for my life. I'm fighting 3 times a game, so I'm not improving, right? Anyway, so they called myself and Todd Hawkins, called him up, and he was a similar type player, great shot, you know, tough. And they go, we're calling you up for 5 games, and that's it. Evaluate you. We're sending you back down. Don't get too excited. Well, my dad had passed when I was 19, so I was like, I can't afford to go down, and I'm going to have to fight all these tough guys every night. So I just decided to start doing it in the NHL, where I was like, okay, I'll just run around and I'll fight anyone and everyone because I can't afford to go back down. And they kept me up, and I played the rest of that year and then ended up getting traded to Calgary at that point. And when you're playing 4 minutes a game of ice time, pretty tough to score goals and get 4 or 5 shots on net. I mean, guys were looking me off. It's like I got a choice. Yeah. Pass to Cerny or take the shot myself. They take the shot themselves.
Goalies weren't even worried about you back door.
I had Steve Tambellini on my line, and if you're playing with Steve, you knew you were going back to the minors because every time he'd get scored on, come back to the bench, he'd stand up, Stern, that was your guy. I was look at the other guys. I go, that wasn't my guy. They go, don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's just Steve.
Yeah, Steve being Steve.
Hey, so you got drafted eventually,
yeah,
to the Vancouver Canucks, where you weren't wearing your white shirt and your red shoes then, were you?
No, I toned it down a little bit. I bought my own clothes that time.
Did you go to the draft? Or?
I did go to the draft because it was in Montreal. So Vancouver called me and they met with me and they go, we really like you. You'll be gone within the first 5 rounds. And back then, if you didn't get drafted, you're draft year, you only got an invite. You didn't get drafted your second year. So I said, well, here's the deal, guys. That's what Philly told me last year. It's in Montreal. It's my hometown. So if I'm not drafted by the 5th round, I'm coming to sit at your friggin' table, right? So it worked out. It was good.
Who drafted you essentially? Was it who called you to the podium, or how did that all transpire?
Oh, geez, Brent, really? No, and it was the scouts, right? Yep. That would call, and got to be honest, I hate saying that I don't remember a lot of the names. If you named them, yep, I would remember. But no, they were just really, really great. And then, you know, they would come see me in junior because I went back to junior,
yep,
that first year, played as a 19-year-old. And they came back and, you know, watched me. They came to my dad's funeral. Like, they were very, very supportive. And I'm surprised they even wanted to be anywhere near me because it wasn't great causes how my dad passed. So, but they were very, very supportive. And I can't say enough. You know, when people always say, who made the difference? There's just too many to to mention, sure. Right?
All right, we're just getting started with our conversation with Ron Stern. That is part one of the conversation as we continue along on the program. It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and it is time now for Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's VaporTight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY. Why tank? And as it is Ron Stern in the spotlight this week, that is going to be our Flames trivia spotlight as well. And here comes your question. So Ron Stern traded to Calgary from Vancouver in March of 1991. So I need to know, what player went the other way in that trade? So the Flames got Ronnie Stern from Vancouver. Who went the other way to the Canucks? We'll give you a few seconds to think about it. All right, the correct answer is, did you get this one? Dana Murzyn went the other way. So Ron Stern from Vancouver to Calgary, Dana Murzyn from Calgary to Vancouver in March 1991. Dana traded after 201 games played as a member of the Flames and, of course, won the Stanley Cup in 1989. That is Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Okay, we are underway on the program this week. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. It's the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And the conversation with Ron Stern continues next. All right, welcome back as we continue along on episode 10 of the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, and of course on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And we'll get back to the conversation with this week's guest of honor. It is Ron Stern. We'll jump back into that conversation very shortly. But first, it's time for this week's edition of Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we're catching up with former Flame Mark Hunter, who played 133 games as a member of the Flames and was a member of that cup-winning team in 1989, 36 years ago this week. Now living in Oil Springs, Ontario, just outside of London, Ontario. He's the GM of the London Knights, as we all know, in the OHL. He's been in that role since 2018 and was in that same capacity between 2002 and 2014. Took a four-year hiatus to go join the Toronto Maple Leafs in their hockey ops department, but has been the GM of the London Knights continuously since 2018 and with a four-year hiatus dating all the way back to 2002. Mark Hunter, this week, Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Okay, it is Ron Stern in the spotlight in this week's conversation, and let's dive right back in. It's Ron with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, part two right now, as we're looking back to Ron's time in the minors, a former fourth-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks. Let's dive back in.
So, I mean, we'll go back to Flint because it sounds like you were in the jungle for a little while there.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
any teammates or players or a game maybe that sticks out playing there that you will never forget?
Well, we'll talk about Dwayne Hutton.
I was wondering if you were going. Oh, I Dwayne was hoping you would be.
Oh, my God.
I was going to tee you up, but you took the bait.
Yeah, they did. They definitely did a survey of the three best hockey players with the most talent that never really made it, right? Dwayne being one of them. He would literally go on a breakaway and he would pivot and skate backwards and wave to the guy chasing him. So you knew whether he scored or didn't score that there was going to be a bench brawl soon as it was over. He would do that. Like, there were so many things that he would do that he tried to put, you know, a stick between his legs. You know, now they do it, you know, all the time.
That wasn't well received then either.
No, and Rick Dudley was our coach, and he had a temper on him. So one game, Hutz went down, breakaway. He'd get 3-4 breakaways a game, right? Goes down, tries between his legs, flip shot, misses a net. Dudley screams at him, says, don't ever do that again. Hutton's laughing, goes next breakaway, does it again, hits crossbar. So then Dudley goes to grab him by the jersey as he's coming in the forwards door gate, goes to grab him. We hold Dudley back. He does a head fake and comes in through the D door. So Dudley, we calm him down, and he's like, what do I do with him? I go, just let him be Hutton. He goes down, another breakaway, does it between the legs again, scores. We win the game. Everyone's happy.
1 for 3.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
good percentage.
GWG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duds was a tough guy, too.
Hmm. Duds was amazing. I will say he was so far ahead of the curve as far as conditioning and work ethic. We would play 3 games in a row and then have 4 days off.
Like, you mean like 3 games in 3 nights?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm used to those.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then you had Sunday off to Thursday, right? So he'd have us 8 a.m. dry land every morning for 2 hours. Then it was on the ice for 2 hours. So, I mean, as much as you hate it, it made you a way better player, so that when you got up and you only played 4 shifts in the NHL a game, there were 4 easy shifts.
You know, I remember in junior, still, you know, having to wait after the game. We played such a bad game that the coach is like, don't take your shift, don't. Sit there until everybody leaves the building, and then you're going back out on the ice, and you're going to skate until I tell you you're done. Did you have any of those instances playing junior or in the minors at all?
Yeah, we all had situations like that. But I think I'll talk about Daryl one time. So we were in San Jose, and Daryl was not happy. So we didn't do it right after the game. He said, tomorrow, you guys don't want to work during the game, you'll work during practice. So he set the clock up for 3 periods and bag skated for 3 periods. Well, the night before, I'm up puking all night. And so I come see the trainer and I go, look, I've been up all night puking. Don't know
what. Shrimp.
Well, but I go, I know I'm going to skate because otherwise the guys are all going to think I'm bailing. So I said, just if I pass out on the ice, I want you guys to know, right? So Daryl's aware of it. We skate 2 periods worth. We're going through the 3rd period. It's just lines back and forth. 60 minutes bag skate.
It's awful.
Old time.
Yeah.
Puck.
Yeah.
So, no pucks.
So there's probably about 5 minutes left, and I'm on the blue line, and I look up. Daryl's next to me. I go, I can't. And typical Daryl, and this is not politically correct, but he goes, can't is a word for I haven't tried hard enough. So that is the last thing I needed to hear at that point, but made sense. Yeah. I got through it.
Unbelievable, Sterny.
Well, it's like, Pat, are you and Jamie running the alumni school in the summertime when you kind of got thrust into action? We didn't know what to do with the kids, and all Jamie and Colin were like, just put them on the line. We'll figure it out. Oh, so yeah. These kids are skating around the ice. Like, what are we doing with them next?
But just blow the whistle. Blow it twice.
They had a great time. They loved it. They loved it.
And the parents came by after, like, that's one of the best practices I've ever seen my kid go.
Kids are all smiling. Yeah. Funny concept.
Yeah, they went to bed right away.
No, they're sweating.
Yeah. You know, Sterny, we'll get to your first NHL game. Do you remember that?
I don't even remember it. I got to be honest.
What do you mean you don't remember?
I don't remember my first NHL game.
Really?
Yeah. I know. I remember one time I got called up Vancouver to Edmonton. I fly right into Edmonton, flew from Flint all day.
Was it the first time?
No, it wasn't the first time. No, I know that's bad. I can't. I'd have to hockey DB my first game. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's crazy because it says that you have... We played 15 games that year. It was at 87-88.
Yeah.
0 goals, 0 assists.
Thanks, Brent.
Oh, 0 points.
Yeah, I can wow. read that too.
Wow. You know what? That was in video replay. Yeah. Sterny had 15 goals all called back. Yeah. Horrible.
The best is, so I fly all day from Flint to get to Edmonton.
How would you get from Flint to...
Okay, now you're going to ask me that.
Yeah. Oh, I
okay.
remember
through
first
three
game.
Different airports.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I get to the game. I do warm up. They tell me I'm not dressing. I'm like, oh, okay. So I don't dress. After the game, team's flying back to Vancouver. They give me a hotel room key, which was across the street at the Forum.
It
old
was,
form.
It was an actual key, too.
Yeah, it was a key. Yeah, form. Nothing plastic, no digital.
Metal one.
Yeah. So they give me a key and a plane ticket to fly back the next morning. So I fly all day, end up back in...
it's Vernie. Yeah.
He's going to chime in about my first game.
I just heard you guys were over there. Come over.
Yeah, come for one. Yeah.
So I end up flying all the way back, get back to Flint, get into the condo, drop my bags, phone rings. It's Dudley. Hey, Vancouver wants you back. You're flying out tomorrow morning. I fly to Vancouver all day again. Again, as you saw, I really perform well.
But, Sterny, tell the people about the pay back in the day. Because when you got called up, you're supposed to, as soon as you got called up, the timer went on until you got sent down and actually back. So you get your minor league salary, and then once it called you up, it was like per day.
You're on the clock.
You're on the clock.
Totally. I mean, I had two-way contract, right? $26,000 U.S. in the minors and $99,000, I think, in the NHL.
Canadian or U.S.?
Canadian. So it was almost better staying in the minors.
Exchange.
Yeah.
Difference is you bust 11 hours instead of flying.
That's so good.
But when you get that check, it's like, wow. Mm.
I remember getting my signing bonus. It was $35,000, and I was so excited. I had already spent it some way, and then I got it after taxes.
On clothes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get five
on the red shoes. Yeah. The red shoes.
Dry cleaning. Yeah. Yeah.
Who knew? Le Bouton was friggin' $2,000.
Yeah.
But, so I realized that there was something called taxes, so I got 17 net.
Disappointment everywhere.
Yeah. Then I was already in the hole.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I got my first signing bonus, my first check I got was $60,000, right? And I didn't really know nothing about taxes either. And I called my agent. I'm like, well, where's the rest of it, right? I'm getting installments here, and it was ridiculous. Yeah. Ruined my day.
You're a first round draft pick. You deserved it though.
Don't forget.
You're a big deal.
Yeah, I was a big deal. Yeah.
Sterny, what round were you?
Fourth round. I think their third pick. Yeah. I was supposed to go top five rounds. My first year was 6 goals, so go figure.
Yep, 70th overall.
Thank you for...
Yeah, you got it. Thanks. I did my homework on you, Ryan. We've been buddies for 15 years.
What round would that be today?
Right? Yeah,
second
I know.
Round.
Yeah, probably, right?
So I always like...
Yeah, good point.
Right. Apples to apples, right?
There you go.
You remember your first...
Le Palme de Le Palme.
Le Palme de...
Yeah. No, it's a French Longueuil.
Who was your first roommate in the National Hockey League? Remember that?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Tony Tanti. Yeah. Tony Tanti, training camp. I do remember. So he used to do the Redmond Leaf chew.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I look at him. I go, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, here, have some." He's like, "Throw a Hubba Bubba gum in, throw this leaf in." And go. And within like 2 minutes, I was puking up in the washroom. And I go, why would you do this? I'm like spinning. And he goes, yeah, that's why I do it.
Oh, you spent a little bit of time in Milwaukee, too, in the IHL. Was that a little better than Flint?
It was. I got to be honest. I can't talk bad about Flint because I had an amazing time. Still close to one family that, you know, took us in. Everyone's in the same boat, right? Everyone's away from their family. A lot of guys have been doing it for a while, some not. So you kind of stick together, and there's a lot of support for for the team, for the players, and you just develop relationships. You know, everyone's going to the sports bar. You do everything as a team because there's nothing else to do, right?
Yeah, 100%.
It's a pretty neat feeling, though. I mean, when you got that booster club and the people supporting you, I mean.
Yeah, and you almost realize and recognize that the obligation that you have to give back to them because they're donating their time, their care, it means a lot to them. Doesn't matter what level you're playing, whether it's a rural team in the minors or junior.
I might go on a run here, but, you know, you don't realize the impact you have on people, even at that level.
Yeah.
And I go, people go, you know, well, you guys are pro hockey players. Well, no. You know, you look at the Rotary Club, the Lions Club, the, you know, all those things, the Kinsmen, they have a big impact on community, and they didn't play hockey. You know, we're like that now with the alumni. I go, we're just a Kinsmen or Rotary or, you know, Lions Club that plays
hockey. It's an opportunity to support your community, support, you know, the sport, and give back, right? So whether it's back then or now.
Well, and what I've learned over doing this for a couple of weeks and interviewing different members of the Flames alumni and some pretty iconic figures like yourself, like Mike Vernon, Lanny McDonald, I've mentioned this before, Theo Fleury, Dana Merzen, is everybody's so humble, and they always talk about, you know, the leaders that taught them and how they passed it on. And you always wonder where it starts, but are there any leaders throughout, you know, your career that you can remember that are like, you know, that guy, and maybe you didn't know it at the time or a particular coach, but was, yeah, you know, I really appreciated him at that moment. Maybe it wasn't what I wanted to hear, but he took me under his wing and helped me out.
Yeah, like I said, I touched on it a little bit when they gave me the captain. You know, Guy Chouinard was the coach, and Guy Lapointe's there, Guy Lafleur, you know, Gilles Loupien, like those guys pulling you aside and trying to guide you, of mold you what you need to be and what a leader is. And team captain doesn't mean you need to be always the loudest and the most
popular.
Yeah, and it's about finding ways to pull everyone together for a common goal, which is to win, because then everyone's happy and everyone likes each other, and it goes that way. So I think it started there. And then, you know, even in Vancouver, you know, the Garth Butchers, you know, would pull me aside, chat with me, the Stan Smeals, right? I remember one time, Richard Berdeur.
King Richard.
Yeah, King Richard. So there was a guy running around, and kind of he, coach chimes in and goes, someone needs to deal with that guy. And then I come back to the bench and I sit, and Berdeur leans over to me. He goes, he was talking about you. I was like, oh, okay, okay.
It's so true, though. If they just say,
Sterny, go deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
But when they say somebody's got to deal with it,
I was tired. I was tired. He was big. I was like, oh, someone else can try, right? I realized really quick when they were dressing either Craig Cox or me. So they were going back and forth. So every time Coxie wasn't dressed, and they'd be like, someone's got to deal with him, I'd be like, okay, that'd be me.
Happy days.
I'm really Coxie. Not going to intimidate him, I got to be honest.
So for parts of, I think, three seasons, maybe four, you were up and down with the Canucks. You'd get 30, 40, you know, 50 games or whatever with the Canucks and sent back down to the minors. You get called up, and then I think you get traded. Well, before you get traded, Brian Burke and Pat Quinn were with the Canucks at the time too, right? And was Burkey tying ties back then, or was he hanging them around his collar?
No, he was hanging. He was hanging them. Yeah. I got a pretty funny story about that. So Trevor Linden, when he came there, we were good buddies and, you know, hanging out. He wasn't of age yet because he was 18. 19 there, right? So we wanted to live together. So Pat Quinn and Brian Burke asked us to come to the office. So I look at Trevor, I was like, I know how this is going to go. It's going to all be my fault. You're the golden child and everything. Well, we get up, we walk in there, and Pat Quinn has got his friggin' cigar going, and the door closed, so there's smoke everywhere.
Eyes watering sitting there.
And he's like, okay, well, I understand you guys want to live together. And then he turns to Trevor and he's like, Trevor, I've heard things about you. You're a little out of hand. People know you. You're going out drinking. You're doing the this, that. So, like, you need to pick up your game, I guess. So I was killing myself laughing. We come out and then he looks at me, he goes, are you kidding me? They think I'm the problem.
You know, Sturdy, I'm listening to the story and I'm going, oh my God, you know, make the names mixed up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what, did you leave him outside the Roxy then? Is that how that would work? He'd drive you home or what?
I unfortunately broke my wrist in Vancouver, and I was in a cast for 3 months. So
3 months?
3 months. Took a while to heal because apparently I drank too much and didn't drink any milk.
Well, the cast's on the other arm now.
So I was going to the Roxy. I get befriended the band, the local band that played, and I used to just go sit and just listen to them and play and then come home. And of course Trevor was always, you know, taking care of himself and making sure he was performing. He was such a great leader and committed to the game. Kind of felt guilty. I got over that. Yeah. So we did live together. Yeah. We had a lot of fun.
I know I'm putting you on the spot, so you don't have to answer
again
if you don't want to. But just
how about your second game? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, do you remember the third shift of your fourth?
My first goal. Yeah, yeah. My first goal. I took a slapper, buried it on the ice 5-hole on Van Beesbrook, and I was jumping up and down. It was like 40 games into the year, and I'm jumping up and down, and everyone's like, what the hell's going on? It's my first goal.
on Van
Beesbrook. No one else knew.
Oh, John Van Beesbrook. You thought you were going top shelf.
Oh, guaranteed.
Right. Oh, that's the worst play ever. When guys come in, you know, I was complaining to Matt Stage, and this is years ago, but I'm like, I hate that shot. Everybody comes in, you know, you're looking top glove, they fan on it, it goes 5-hole. It's such a joke, right?
Some guys actually practice that nowadays.
Yeah. I know it's awful, but then
I didn't have that skill to practice it.
But he would say too, he would get pissy with all of us goalies when the puck would just go off the shaft. You know what I mean? We wouldn't even be doing anything; we'd just shaft out, right? He said it kind of all works out, but
so Sterny, score your first goal.
Yeah,
what are you thinking? Who assisted? What
oh, again, like, really?
Oh my God!
It was probably Tambellini taking credit again.
He dumped it in. You got off.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but it's just one of those.
It's a great feeling.
Great feeling. It took me 30 games to get it.
Well, you know what?
And I was kind of like, I anticipated scoring goals, right? Yeah. And in the minors, my stats were pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Check it out, Brent.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You were impressive.
Check it out. There you go. Impressive. I mean, the playoffs,
scored
16
two
games, 8 goals, 8 assists, playing with John Cullen.
Yeah.
I just needed better players.
Yeah.
Good player. You know, I always said, you know, if I play with good players, I'm average. If I play with really good players, I'm good.
You can throw a grenade pass up by their ears. They catch it, put it down, and bury it in the net. And you're like, yeah, what a great pass.
You know, we're going to stay on the topic of goals here, Sturdy.
Oh, jeez.
You've had a couple hat tricks in your career.
Yeah, like I don't want to brag.
Three of them, I think.
Three?
I think only two, but sure.
Yeah, two.
Did they toss the hats back then or no?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think anyone really wanted to waste their hat on me.
You know, you get your hat trick. Remember
here's my story.
So, like,
here's my
story. If you remember lighting up Van Beesbrook, you got to remember your
hat trick. Okay, no, I'll remember one of the hat tricks where early in the season, scored
three different games.
Scored three goals. I'm pretty excited. One was San Jose. I can't remember if it was Boston was the other one, but I scored three goals early in the season, and I am so pumped because I had a bonus for 20 goals, and I was like, this could be the year. Three goals. No, I still ended up with 7 goals that year.
You got it out of the way. You were going on a per-game basis until you realized you had to do it more than one game.
It's like when my kids say, well, what do you know? You only scored 7 goals a year, and I was like, yeah, but how many hat tricks do you score in the NHL?
Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
It's good trivia.
That's good trivia.
You did fight Ty Domi, though.
That's a pretty good story, too.
Yes.
Pretty sure Ty doesn't remember this, but so typical. We're in Toronto, Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, and Ty's running around like he owns the place, which he does. So Daryl's losing his marbles, and he's like, someone needs to deal with Domi. He's skating around like he owns the place. Stern, you're up.
Yeah.
Okay. So I go, and I kind of run Ty in the corner and bump him, and I tell him, I go, we got to go. And he's like, you? So he's kind of laughing.
Or where's your sister?
Yeah.
I'm more afraid of her.
So I kind of, so we square off, we drop the gloves, and then we're kind of, and all I'm thinking about is, please don't get knocked out. Hockey night in Canada, Saturday night in Toronto. I'll never hear the end of it. So threw a few bombs, tried to make it look good. I mean, he's a scrappy. He's got that jersey that you grab his collar and it stretches down to his kneecaps. It's not a lot of fun. So tried to make it short and quick. We fell. And as he's on top of me and he goes, you're lucky I like you. I go, well, so you would only try and take my head off like five times instead of seven? Anyways, it just things like that where you kind of...
Discussing where you're going to go that night, try to figure plans out, right?
Yeah. Hey, where's happy hour?
I'll just reiterate what, you know, Huntsy said. One of the toughest guys pound for pound, right?
Mm.
You know, Sterney, not a big man, but would fight anybody.
All right, there you go. That is this week's conversation. Ron Stern in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Even Tim Hunter hanging out for a little bit as well as we start to wrap up this week's episode. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Ron. Thanks to Croner. Thanks to Patter. And thanks to Tim Hunter for sticking around for a little bit as well. You can get this program on the Flames Talk podcast feed whenever you want to. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, done for another week. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. We will talk to you on the next episode.